of life's riddles are answered in the movies.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes.
It was fun.
This isn't a movie. This is reality. There's a difference.
Here's one thing I've learned from the movies.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Night with Will and Noah. I am Noah Gattell, film critic for The Rye Record, and I feel like an Iron Man without a cap today, or a Rocket Raccoon without a Baby Groot, because my podcast co-host, Will Yovanovitch, is not here. We were going to talk about Avengers Endgame. We've been looking forward to this for a long time, but he is unable to make it, so I'm going to have to fly solo today. Thank you for being here, and I will try to make it interesting for you. Before I get into Avengers Endgame, it's time for our segment, What Did You See This Week? And I want to talk about a film I saw this week called Little Woods.
You said if I wanted back in to come see you, so you could move, say, 500 pills?
500 pills.
Every day I'm with Mom and she's dying, and all I can do is get her some medication so it hurts less.
You got something.
Yeah, Oxy. 12 a pill, but 10 for you. It's not what I wanted, all right? It just kind of turned into this.
You can read my review about it at TheEconomist.com on their Prospero blog. But let me tell you something about it now. This is a debut film from a New York-born African-American director named Nia DaCosta, who has told a story far outside of her personal experiences. This is a film about a young woman in a North Dakota oil boomtown who, as the film starts, is on parole for dealing opioids, and she's trying to walk the straight and narrow, but her estranged sister comes to her with a health problem, and she's forced to get back into the game in order to take care of what is essentially the only family she has. It sounds like the setup for a kind of sleazy crime movie, but what I liked most about it was how it did not sensationalize any of it. There are lots of opportunities in the film to ratchet up the tension, especially when a rival drug dealer who is much more comfortable with violence than our protagonist is shows up. But DaCosta does not take the bait at all. She stays true to her character's reality, and there will be times when you are wanting the film to kind of ratchet up the tension and sensationalize a little bit, and she doesn't do it. And in the end, I think it pays off because it achieves a big emotional impact in the final scenes. And she also resists the urge to politicize anything, because this is a story that deals with a lot of hot-button issues, like healthcare access, abortion, the housing crisis, opioid addiction, of course. But these issues are woven into the fabric of the story really delicately, and they rarely stand out in any way that would disrupt the narrative. So, well done to Ms. DaCosta, and her leading lady, Tessa Thompson, who is fantastic in this movie. And she's in Avengers Endgame as well, of course. But DaCosta is really a name to watch. She has been tapped to direct the Jordan Peele-produced sequel to the cult horror film Candyman, which came out in the early 90s, I think, and it was subtextually about urban gentrification. So it seems like she'd be a really good fit for that kind of project, something that is sort of political under the surface, but not overtly so. So go see Little Woods, if you can, so you can say you knew her when. Okay, now it's time to talk about Avengers Endgame. Before I do that, I want to say that my relationship to the Marvel Cinematic Universe is complicated. I was not a comic book kid growing up at all. I don't think I read a single one. But I've liked some of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I liked Iron Man, the first one, a lot. I was always a big Robert Downey Jr. fan. I grew up watching him in the late 80s and the early 90s in rom-coms like Chances Are, and Heart and Souls, and The Great Soap Dish, of course. And then I loved watching his comeback after he had those legal and drug problems in movies like Wonder Boys and Two Girls and a Guy. Two Girls and a Guy is a small movie, about 85 minutes, I think, but he is absolutely fantastic in it. I highly recommend it. So seeing the great synergy between the actor and the role was kind of thrilling, and seeing his comeback was thrilling, even though I basically knew nothing about Iron Man beforehand. since Iron Man, I've gone to a lot of these movies. I've reviewed a lot of these movies. I've liked a lot of these movies. But I always felt like I was the mark in some long corporate con. Like, Kevin Feige and the other folks at Marvel were tricking me into ponying up for tickets to these movies, often on opening day. And I never quite got the satisfaction that I expect from a big blockbuster movie. To quote George Costanza, because it would not be a Movie Night with Will and Noah podcast without at least one Seinfeld reference, I felt cheap and violated. I mean, all these movies exist only as a bridge from the last one to the next one, right? We know that. Very few of them had enough finality to justify their existence and to leave you really satisfied, and because of that, I had a complicated relationship with them. I would go into each movie sort of with my arms folded as if to say, well, let's see if you can make me forget that this is just product. Let's see if you can make me feel something. But now we're at the end, and I feel something. Endgame is truly the end of this journey, and it is satisfying in all the ways the earlier films never quite were. So much so that I forgive Marvel of everything. They pulled it off, and while the text of this movie was thoroughly engaging, what I was perhaps most moved by as I watched this saga conclude was the fact that they actually made it happen in the first place. I was moved by the achievement, which, when you think about it, is really unprecedented. The filmmakers behind the MCU, they took a well-known but not super famous intellectual property, spun it out into a series of 22 interconnected films over 11 years, introducing new characters in almost each one. They built a really solid aesthetic foundation, and then eventually, at just the right time, allowed new filmmakers to come and sort of leave their artistic stamp on it. And they finally built to a conclusion that somehow managed to satisfy almost everyone and, oh, by the way, become probably the highest grossing film of all time. Watching all of that click into place in this film, when I had no expectation that it really would do so, I was able to put down my arms and allow myself to be just overwhelmed by the spectacle. So I loved this movie.
He used the stones again.
Hey, we'd be going in shorthanded, you know?
Look, he's still got the stones, so...
So let's get him. Use them to bring everyone back.
Just like that.
Yeah, just like that.
Even if there's a small chance that we can undo this, I mean, we owe it to everyone who's not in this room to try.
If we do this, how do we know it's gonna end any differently than it did before?
Because before you didn't have me.
Hey, new girl. Everybody in this room is about that superhero life. And if you don't mind my asking, where the hell have you been all this time?
There are a lot of other planets in the universe. And unfortunately, they didn't have you guys.
Let me do a little plot here, and I'm going to try to do this without any spoilers. The movie starts basically where Avengers Infinity War ended. The intergalactic villain Thanos has snapped his fingers, wearing the Infinity Gauntlet with the Infinity Stones in it, and eliminated half of all living creatures on the planet, including most of the Phase 2 or Phase 3 superheroes from Marvel. So as the movie starts, the Avengers team sort of gets back together, and they immediately go find him. They have a plan to reverse it, and it doesn't go well. In fact, things end up sort of worse than they were before in some ways. And then we cut to 5 years in the future, and the Avengers are all kind of off doing their own things. They've moved on. Tony Stark has a wife and kid. Captain America is like in support groups for bereaved people. Black Widow is still holding down the fort. She's still keeping track of all the Avengers and sending them out to fight crime, but you know, her heart isn't really in it anymore. And then Ant-Man shows up, having escaped the quantum realm, I think it is, and he comes up with this sort of time travel plan to reverse what happened when Thanos snapped his fingers and eliminated half of all living creatures. And from then on, the movie sort of becomes a time travel film, which is a new thing for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it allows the filmmakers to take the viewers on a tour of some iconic moments in the Marvel Cinematic Universe history. It's sort of the Back to the Future 2 trick. And that movie is actually referenced in the script of this movie, as are some other time travel movies, because the Marvel Cinematic Universe is nothing if not pop culture savvy. So it becomes this time travel movie where the Avengers all split up and go to different time periods to basically recapture the Infinity Stones. And it's a lot of fun. It's very self-referential. It's very goofy. It concludes with a big battle scene, as it always must do. It also does some new things. It spends a lot of time with not a new character, but one that we don't know quite as well, who is Nebula, one of Thanos' daughters. And I was really impressed that even at this late date, it's still taking the time to build up her character. And she has a very poignant arc, the way it ends up. It also finds a great use for Paul Rudd, who is one of my favorite comic actors. He's been the lead in two Ant-Man movies, so he's not new to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He was also used sparingly in Captain America: Civil War. But here he sort of kickstarts the whole plot when he comes up with a time travel plan. And more than that, he serves as the audience surrogate that these movies desperately need. I can't tell you how many times I've thought that when the Avengers are going on about Tesseracts and Infinity Stones, someone on screen should just speak for me and say, I have no idea what you guys are even talking about. And Rudd basically gets to do this in this movie, and he kind of plays that, he embodies that idea throughout the whole movie. And what is most satisfying about this movie, besides the finality, is that it's a return to the beginning. For the most part, the stars of this movie are the original Avengers. Captain America, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Iron Man, and Rocket Raccoon is thrown in there as well, and a few others. But there was something nostalgic about that, but also really effective on its own terms. These are the most well-defined characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They're the ones who mean the most to us, because we've been watching them for so long. And I really enjoyed watching them act together. They get to do real acting in this movie. And while the battle scene at the end was fantastic and overwhelming, and there's a lot of great big stuff to talk about in this movie, I really savored watching these great actors do their thing together one more time. I mean, Mark Ruffalo, Scarlett Johansson, these are Oscar-nominated actors. And Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth, they really rose to the challenge, I think, and did some of their best work. So it was wonderful to see. And that leads me to the final thing I want to discuss about Avengers Endgame, which is its Oscar chances. Now, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, will an Avengers movie get nominated for Oscars, I would have said, well, just the technical categories, probably. But last year, Black Panther broke through. Last year, Black Panther got nominated for Best Picture. And I don't know if Avengers Endgame will get nominated for Best Picture, but I think Robert Downey Jr. is going to get nominated for Best Actor. He is fantastic in this movie. He gets some of the most poignant moments, and he, more than any of the other characters, really manages to capture all of the experiences that his character, Tony Stark, has gone through over the last 11 years. He's kind of the only actor good enough to really do that, and he has the most to work with as his character has gone through the most. So I think he has a chance at a nomination just on the merits alone, but it's also worth noting that none of this would have happened without him. If Iron Man had not been a hit, the Marvel Cinematic Universe might not have even gone forward. And it's hard to imagine it being such a hit with anyone else in that role. That's how much he has embodied that role. So that may give him a little extra leg up in the campaign, that he is in some way responsible for all of this ever happening. So expect a Best Actor nod for Robert Downey Jr. And who knows, he might even win it. He's never won one, and he's certainly worthy of a Lifetime Achievement Oscar at this point. So now we ask, who would you go see this movie with? And obviously, anybody who is into these movies, you're going to go see this movie. You probably already have. I guess the question is, would people who are not as familiar with the Marvel Cinematic Universe still get something out of this movie? And I honestly think they would. They're going to miss a lot of stuff. Frankly, I missed a lot of stuff because I hadn't rewatched some of the older movies when I saw it. But I still think they'll enjoy it. I mean, the battle scenes and the fight scenes are incredibly well choreographed. There's a balletic fight scene between Hawkeye and Black Widow. I won't spoil the circumstances of that. That is really as beautifully done as anything in the whole franchise. And I think somebody who's somewhat unfamiliar with it but likes this type of movie would enjoy it. Now, why somebody who likes this type of movie but is still unfamiliar with it, I couldn't tell you. But if said person exists, you could go ahead and bring them to it. So basically, you can bring anyone to it. And bring yourself. Go see it again. I'm probably going to see it again, and I think it'll be even better the second time. Okay, well, since we're talking about Marvel Endgame, we might as well do my top five definitive Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. As I said, I have a complicated relationship. I haven't loved all these movies, but there were more than five that could have made this list, so there was a lot of competition. Let me start with number five, which is Marvel's The Avengers.
It's good to meet you, Dr. Banner. Your work on anti-electron collisions is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
Thanks.
Dr. Banner is only here to track the cube. I was hoping you might join him.
Let's start with that stick of his. It may be magical, but it works an awful lot like a Hydra weapon.
I don't know about that, but it is powered by the cube. And I'd like to know how Loki used it to turn two of the sharpest men I know into his personal flying monkeys.
Monkeys? I do not understand.
I do. I understood that reference.
There's a lot about this movie that doesn't work, if you ask me. Most of it is shot really boringly. It has no real visual character. Joss Whedon, who directed it, was a TV director, and it looks like a TV show. But it gets right for the first time what all the future Avengers movies got right, and Captain America Civil War, which is basically an Avengers movie. It puts these well-drawn characters with wildly disparate backgrounds and experiences and conflicting ideologies into a plot together, and it lets them pinball off each other. And that is always the most fun. The exchanges in this movie between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers, and Tony Stark and Bruce Banner, and Nick Fury and Steve Rogers, are smart and funny, and I think are more important to the franchise than all of the explosive third act battle scenes put together. I love watching these guys go at each other, and then, of course, put it all aside to go fight the bad guys, and that's what this movie does so well. And it still had a great third act battle scene, and it also had the first and probably still the best use of Hulk in the whole MCU. Hulk gets all the best moments in the third act, from I'm always angry, that's my secret, to Hulk smash, to when he interrupts Loki in the middle of a grandiose speech and throws him around the room. It's all great. And given how much speculation there was about if they were going to get Hulk right, and how Hulk had never been gotten right before in film, this was easily one of the most cathartic things in the whole series, was just the satisfaction of seeing them get Hulk right the first time. So Avengers is number 5. It gets a lot right, especially the big green guy. Now, number 4, I'm going to go with Iron Man.
I'm just not the hero type, clearly, with this laundry list of character defects, all the mistakes I made, largely public. Yeah, okay, yeah. The truth is, I am Iron Man.
It's where it all began. The perfect synergy of star and character. I already talked about it a lot, but I was such a fan of Robert Downey Jr. Watching him do this was really, really thrilling, and it made me optimistic about the future of film, if I'm being honest, that a talent like him could find a big budget movie that actually incorporated his persona into it, instead of squashing what made him special under special effects, which so many big budget movies do. And Iron Man, I have to admit, has a very forgettable villain. Do you even remember who it was? Jeff Bridges was the villain in this movie. But he has a tone and a look and an ending that we hadn't seen in superhero movies before. And that made it really special. I saw it twice in the theater, which I almost never do, even though I am going to see Avengers Endgame twice, most likely. And I think it still holds up really well, largely due to Jon Favreau's direction and Downey's incredible performance. My number 3 best Marvel Cinematic Universe film is Iron Man 3.
Some people call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher.
America. Ready for another lesson.
This, to me, is the crowning achievement of writer-director Shane Black, who did not do any other Marvel movies. He was a big screenwriting star in the 80s. Not well-known to anybody outside of Hollywood, but within Hollywood, he was a big deal. He was known for action movies in the 80s. He did the Lethal Weapon movies, for example, and The Last Boy Scout, which I believe was in the 90s with Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans. He got paid an amount for that screenplay that was unheard of at the time. And then he kind of went away for a while, and he came back with a movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And this was a big comeback for Robert Downey Jr. as well. He'd already had some good notices for supporting roles after his drug and legal problems. But Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was sort of an LA noir, self-referential, funny movie, and Downey was the lead in it. And I know that when he was given the opportunity to audition for Iron Man, a lot of it was based on his performance in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. So he repaid the favor to Shane Black by getting him the job of writing and directing Iron Man 3. And I think it's the funniest MCU film made. Maybe close to another one, which I'm going to talk about next. But what Shane Black did was bring a lot of the quippy dialogue that he perfected in the 80s to it, particularly in the relationship between Tony Stark and Rhodes, played by Don Cheadle, who would also be War Machine. There was a lot of Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, like from Lethal Weapon, in their relationship. I also really like what this film did with its villain. Now, I wasn't a fan of the ultimate villain, who is played by Guy Pearce, who is one of my favorite actors, but the character's not that interesting. He's essentially a military contractor who wants to start a war to sell his product. But what's really cool is that you think the villain at first is the Mandarin, who in the comics is basically just a terrorist. And in the movie, he's depicted that way for the first half of the movie. He's played by Ben Kingsley. He seems super scary. He's got a strange voice. And he blows up army bases. But halfway through the movie, Tony Stark finds him, and you discover he's not who you think he is. He's actually an actor, a British guy, who seems like a bit of a dimwit, and perhaps, I think he says he has a substance abuse problem at one point, who has been hired to play the Mandarin by the other guy, the Guy Pearce character. And it's really, it really works for two reasons. Number one, it's just really, really funny and a really surprising turn. I don't think any of these Marvel movies have had a big twist like that in them yet, and this one has a great one. But it's also interesting and says something about where we were at culturally. There were actually quite a few movies around this time that featured war as a plot device and often had the villain be a like military contractor who was trying to drum up war for financial gain. And this speaks pretty well to where a lot of people were at this time in the late 2000s, early 2010s, when there was sort of a conventional wisdom in some circles that the military-industrial complex had driven or was driving some of our wars in the Middle East. And the movies reflected this quite often at this time, but I don't think any of them reflected it quite as well as Iron Man 3 did. So kudos to Black on the turn there, which was a big risk. And he got a lot of ire from comic book fans who, they're very serious about sticking to canon, sticking to what the comics say. So this was a big deviation from that, and it was a risk, but I think it paid off handsomely. Okay, number two. Thor Ragnarok.
Hey, take it easy, man. Over here, the pile of rocks waving at you. Here.
You're a Cronin, aren't you?
That I am.
How'd you end up in here?
Oh, well, I tried to start a revolution, but didn't print enough pamphlets, so hardly anyone turned up, except for my mum and her boyfriend, who I hate.
Thor Ragnarok came out a couple years ago. It was a film directed by Taika Waititi, the New Zealand actor and director who made Hunt for the Wilder People and What We Do in the Shadows, the latter of which is a vampire mockumentary, easily one of my favorite comedies of this century, so see it if you haven't. But Thor Ragnarok showed for the first time that a Marvel director could break through the groupthink and really put his own stamp on the material, which Ryan Coogler would also do a few months later with Black Panther. And it's probably the funniest Marvel movie. It's probably funnier than Iron Man 3. It's got Waititi himself playing some sort of sensitive rock monster, Jeff Goldblum doing his Jeff Goldblum thing as a charming but pretty evil alien ruler. It's got Mark Ruffalo doing a very different Bruce Banner and Hulk than he normally does. I thought he was sort of channeling like 80s Michael Keaton in his manic depiction of Banner when he's on the run from authorities on a foreign planet. Although he reminds me also a bit of Michael Peña and what he was doing in the Ant-Man movies. But it's really effective, it's very funny, and it's different than what we're used to seeing from Ruffalo. But maybe the funniest person in Thor Ragnarok is Chris Hemsworth himself. And that's what I found so impressive. You know, after Thor The Dark World was met with ho-hum reviews and just good, not great box office, the MCU really went in a different direction with Thor. They cut his hair, and they made him funny. And to me, that's the moment I really was back in on the MCU, because I saw that while they definitely had a plan, they could also improvise. And so it didn't just feel like, to me anymore, I was just sitting there and watching this plan go by. It felt like there was something alive about it. And Thor Ragnarok is what made me feel that way. It's a really brilliant turn in the MCU and an important movie for Chris Hemsworth, actually, showing that he could do comedy, and he's done a lot of comedy since then. And my number one movie in the MCU is Avengers Endgame. That's how good it is. I've already talked about it a lot. I don't know what else to say except the finality. We need it. Big blockbuster movies don't end anymore. They almost always leave the door open for a sequel. And I was so, so grateful that this one felt like it was over. I know there will be more Marvel movies to this year. In fact, I think, starting with Spider-Man Far From Home this summer. But when Avengers Endgame ended, I walked out of the theater satisfied in a way that I haven't been in a really, really long time. And it could be the start of a trend. The new Star Wars film that comes out later this year, The Last Skywalker, will also be a conclusion to the most recent trilogy. So perhaps this will be a start of something new. Maybe producers are beginning to realize that we need to feel the emotional stakes that come with an actual ending. And boy, did I feel them with Avengers Endgame. I was happy when it ended, I was happy when I was watching it, and I'll be happy when I see it again. So that's the list, and that's all the time we have this week. We will be back, probably in 2 weeks. Don't know what we're going to be talking about yet, but I imagine it's going to be something thrilling. Thrilling for us anyway, and hopefully thrilling for you. So thank you for being here, and Will and I will see you in a couple weeks. And until then, we'll see you at the movies.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show.